First, it's the week in Washington, where we take a look at some of the top stories in national politics. There's still a vice presidential debate scheduled for tonight between Vice President Mike Pence and Senator Kamala Harris. The president, still fighting COVID-19, is back at the White House, while staffers around him have also come down with the disease. And we saw the president abruptly extinguish hopes for further coronavirus stimulus measures, then walk back the tweet, and then leave the door open for some kind of economic relief package. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see Congress pass and the president sign some kind of coronavirus economic relief package before Election Day? What does it mean for you? Are you in need of some kind of relief from the federal government? Should there be a big package or bits and pieces? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Ginger Gibson is Deputy Washington Editor for NBC Digital. Ginger, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this is a fast-moving story as part of a slow-moving story, this long effort to get another round of recovery package up until yesterday, and the series of tweets from the president. Up until yesterday, Ginger, where were we on this?
So up until yesterday, it looked like Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, and Speaker Pelosi were talking, were trying to come to a deal. And what was surprising for many of us in Washington, it looked like it was possible they could get something done before the election. Normally, Congress just ceases to function this close to an election, in part because normally they're on recess for the month of October, out campaigning, running for their offices. But that all changed when the president started tweeting on Tuesday.
So here comes 1:48, a tweet. The president says Speaker Pelosi is asking for too much. He says that it's a bailout for what he called poorly run Democrat states. And then he says, quoting now, "I have instructed my representatives to stop negotiating until after the election when, immediately after I win, we'll pass a major stimulus bill that focuses on hardworking Americans and small business." So 1:48, it looks like it's done. Nothing's going to happen, right?
It did. The president sort of giving the command to his team to stop talking to Pelosi, to end conversations. We saw the stock market drop almost immediately upon the president sending that tweet, and really try to just bring to a halt the process. And what was a bit of a politically baffling move. I mean, he could have continued to negotiate with them and blame the Democrats for refusing to make a deal. But at that point, it looked like, you know, all on Trump. He's the one who's decided to walk away from the table.
Okay, that's yesterday afternoon. Yesterday evening, 8:54. I think these are Eastern time. Another tweet from the president. The House and Senate should immediately approve $25 billion for airline payroll support and $135 billion for paycheck protection program for small business. 20 minutes later, he says he'd sign a standalone bill for stimulus checks. So 6 hours have passed now, and it looks like the president's saying, OK, no big deal, but a lot of the parts of it we should move ahead on.
That's right. So that was really something that has been trying to get done in Congress already. And in the previous discussions, we talked about this effort to get a deal. There was some talk. Pelosi had said she would. The House Democrats would approve a bill that just addressed the airlines. There was some talk in the Senate about what they called a skinny bill, some type of really small additional help for people, additional unemployment, maybe a stimulus. And so it looked like the president sort of, after saying stop doing it, then realized that there were things that might have been possible and went back to say, never mind, maybe we should talk about some of these things after all. But it was a bit of a back and forth, all in the president's Twitter account.
Ginger Gibson is with us from NBC Digital, looking at some of the top stories in national politics right now, looking at the still elusive possibility of further COVID-19 economic relief from the federal government. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Frank is with us in Egg Harbor. Frank, hi.
Hi. I find the president's lack of leadership, consistently bad. So, I mean, consistently lacking. He basically goes with the whim of whatever, six hours later. And the stock market tanks. And people lose money. And, oh, I changed my mind. And then people are depending on these dollars who in Door County don't have jobs because of COVID. They lose, you know, Door County, businesses open and close all the time because of the number of cases. There's nothing to count on in this president because he lacks critical thought, any consistency of thought, and I'll take your comments off the air.
Frank, thanks for the call. Ginger, Frank pointed toward Door County, a big tourist destination here in Wisconsin, and the kind of businesses hit hardest by COVID, the tourist spots, the residential vacation places, restaurants, bars, and beyond. Is that something that is on the table for a future maybe paycheck protection program type of thing?
Yeah, we've heard from restaurants. We've heard from trade associations that include tourist type of attractions. You know, it is painfully obvious here in Washington, D.C., how badly the tourism industry has been hit by this pandemic. One need only walk around the city, what is normally this time of year full of school field trips, is empty. I went to the American History Museum. It finally opened last week. I took my daughter on Sunday, and it was, you know, a handful of people. It's a far cry from what it normally is. So I think we're seeing that in Washington, but is it something they're considering? Yes. Do I think that it's imminent? Probably not quite, but if they were to get another deal done, I do think that tourism, the movie theater industry is another one that's really clamoring for some help, and restaurants and bars.
What has been the response in Congress over the last, 26, 27 hours?
You know, Congress is aware that the public sort of wants to see something happen, that America continues to suffer economically. And we have seen some members who have said they would like to see something get done. Keep in mind, they're mostly not here. The Senate was sent home until October 19th. Senator McConnell's effort to stop the spread of the coronavirus among members of the Senate after three members have tested positive. He's going to need all those members if he's going to get a Supreme Court nominee approved before the election. And so they're not in the building to be working. They're at home, many of them campaigning, but we are hearing from some of them that they would like to see something happen.
Speaking of the Senate, the president in his initial series of tweets there had urged Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, quote, not to delay, but to instead focus full time on approving my outstanding nominee to the United States Supreme Court. So the president saying, set the economic relief aside, go for this Supreme Court nominee. Is there movement on that?
They are continuing to move. So Senator Lindsey Graham, who's in a very tough reelection battle in South Carolina, has set hearings. He's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, has set hearings for October the 12th. They're still scheduled to happen. But had this coronavirus outbreak not happened among Republicans in Washington, they would have had a much easier time of it. Now they've talking about virtual hearings. They've got members who are sick who are on the Judiciary Committee. They don't want anyone else to catch it. They're going to need all of those members to get the nomination out of committee and to get it approved on the Senate floor. So it has complicated this, but they continue to insist they'll be able to move forward without delay.
We're talking to Ginger Gibson, Deputy Washington Editor for NBC Digital, looking at some of the top stories this week in national politics. As always, lots of them. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You can still weigh in on whether you think Congress should do a big economic relief package or some small ones. And I want to hear what you think about the White House response to a COVID outbreak at and around the White House. What would you want to see the government do differently to try to contain that? Should members of Congress be meeting in person to do things like in the Senate to confirm a Supreme Court justice? Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about some of the week's top stories in national politics. Ginger Gibson is with us from NBC Digital. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the possibility of another economic relief package coming from Congress and the president. Should there be more stimulus checks, especially for the long-term unemployed right now? 800-642-1234 is the number to call, or email ideas@WPR.org. Ginger, before we move on from this topic, we touched on the airline industry. We touched on maybe relief for restaurants and other businesses heavily affected. How about that idea of direct stimulus payments to some category of Americans? Is that something people are still talking about?
I mean, it's still on the table, and I think that we are still seeing it discussed by leaders, by the White House. The president very much wanted to have checks, particularly ones with his name on it, going out before the election. The time is ticking on that, so I don't know that it could happen before the election. But I do think we could see another round of stimulus payments, especially as we're getting in to the winter. It's starting to get cold, and there's a lot of fear that we'll see another spike in the virus as people head indoors.
Let's bring on another caller now at 800-642-1234. Kevin is with us in Appleton. Kevin, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering, in the first stimulus bill, I was kind of left out of it because my wife's documented status right now is going through the process and everything. And I'm just wondering if there's anything in the bill, because I did see Marco Rubio, and I'm not sure of the other congressman that was trying to pass through, trying to get us that were left out of the first bill into this next bill. And I haven't heard too much about it, if it's even being considered right now.
Oh, interesting, Kevin. I haven't followed that closely. Ginger, is that something that you're hearing from members of Congress, people who, for various reasons, were left out of that first round of stimulus payments?
Yeah, Kevin brings up an example of one that I don't think anyone intended to leave people like Kevin out of that first bill. Someone who was married to someone who's a non-citizen, and so the bill meant to not give money to non-citizens and ended up also not giving it to those who were married, to those who were still going through the naturalization or the getting the visa process, which had been delayed by the virus. And so I do think that there's an awareness about that and a desire to not repeat that in another round if they get to another round. But all of this will, you know, stimulus, no stimulus, unemployment, no unemployment, airlines, movie theaters, bars, any of it could come or go until a bill gets signed into law.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. I want to move on to another COVID-19 related story, this time centered at the White House. Ginger, the president himself, of course, a positive diagnosis. Let's start with the president. What do we and don't we know at this point?
So the president, as you said, has COVID-19. He continues to insist that he's doing well, that he's recovered. As I'm sure everyone knows now, it feels like it would have been hard to avoid. He was hospitalized over the weekend, taken on Friday evening to Walter Reed Medical Center, the military hospital just outside of Washington. He received a battery of treatments, pretty aggressive treatments, even as they were insisting he wasn't that sick. He came home at the start of the week. And then this afternoon, we understand he is in the Oval Office. So he's in a matter of days resumed to his office.
Let's bring on a caller. Tom is with us in Milwaukee. Tom, hi.
Hi. I'm curious about the lack of contact tracing in the White House. Could you speculate on the reason or multiple reasons why they would not do that? I would assume it'd be something like either general embarrassment, but could it also be not wanting to reveal who might be infected if there's some legislative action with the Senate?
Tom, thanks for the call. There's this growing list, Ginger, of people in President Trump's circle in the White House and beyond. What do we know about if there's efforts to contact trace all of those people?
That's right. So what we're getting essentially is a list of people connected to the president, around the president, who have the disease and who have been public about their positive test results, AIDS advisors. What we don't have is figuring out how it got there, right? This is a man who has the world's best protection and the ability to test every person who comes into contact with him. And he has insisted that he doesn't wear masks because of that. But we now know that even with that, you can catch the virus, especially if you don't wear masks. So we're not seeing the White House engage in the type of contact tracing to figure out where it came from or who gave the president the disease, and then subsequently who the president gave the disease to. Why they won't do that? One might guess the embarrassment factor, figuring out who gave it to him and who he gave it to, and the ability for his opponents to say who he's responsible for having given it to. They say that they don't need a contact trace because everyone who might have come in contact with him is aware that he has it and is aware that they should be following the procedures and getting themselves tested. So that seems to be a bit of it, but I think that there's a lot of people in America who would like to know just how the president caught it.
And we have now the White House and staff there, and people are concerned about Secret Service agents, cleaning crew and more, members of the Senate and congressional staffers. And now the nation's top military leaders quarantining after a Coast Guard admiral had a positive test.
That's right. An admiral, sort of a deputy in the Coast Guard, had a positive test, and then several of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the guys who run our military, quarantining because they had been in contact with him. You know, I saw this statistic. The District of Columbia on Monday had 13 positive cases. The White House has produced more than that in the last month. I mean, I know Wisconsin has seen a spike in cases. You guys are responding to a bit more spread. Here in Northern Virginia and in Washington, D.C., our numbers are so small right now. The spread has been really reduced. And so this outbreak in the White House is accounting for some of more cases than the rest of the city as a whole at this point.
Talking to Ginger Gibson from NBC Digital. It's our weekly roundup of top stories in national politics. Let's go back to your calls now on COVID recovery stimulus ideas from Congress. Brian is with us in Eau Claire. Brian, hi. Oop, we lost Brian. Let's go to Phil in Mount Horeb. Phil, hello.
Hi. I think that we need to connect the dots on this administration's policy with COVID and the economy in multiple ways. The trade policies, which have devastated our international trade in agriculture, one of Wisconsin's primary industries. I can't understand why farmers are supporting the administration when they've botched that so badly. I also want to point out that we've spent almost $10,000 in the initial stimulus package for every man, woman, and child in this country, $10,000. And if that stimulus, because we lacked the contact tracing and testing capabilities, we weren't able to contain the virus. The tourism industry in Wisconsin, which is, along with agriculture, the other major industry, has been devastated by the inability for people to get out and commingle. The restaurants and bars, you go right down the list. The economic policies of this administration have been an absolute disaster, a debacle for Wisconsin.
Phil, thanks a lot for the call. And Ginger, people are watching these twin issues dealing with COVID-19 and the economic fallout as key drivers in the presidential race. Are you watching for some of those things that Phil brought up there in the month between now and Election Day?
Absolutely. I think Phil has really hit the nail on the head about what calculation we see, particularly undecided voters, doing. Consistently in polls over the last 6 months, we've seen voters say that they don't like how the president has handled the coronavirus pandemic, that they don't feel like he has responded to it adequately, and that more could have been done. However, we have seen polling that shows a majority of Americans still thought he was the best of the candidates to handle the economy. economy, that they thought he had done well with the economy for the next 3 years. And that was sort of Trump's last argument for reelection, was the economy. But we've seen in the last week, especially as we've seen numbers of people who think that his contracting the virus is just evidence of the handling he's had of the pandemic nationwide, his numbers on the economy have also dropped. We've seen two polls this week that came out that showed the American public no longer believes that Donald Trump is the best to handle the economy. And now they're putting that trust into Joe Biden. The president catching a global pandemic virus the month before the election may go down in history as one of the most consequential October surprises ever. And if the poll numbers don't reverse course quickly as one of the most devastating October surprises ever, we've really seen people who think that it is sort of an indictment on his competency in office.
Just in our last minute, Ginger, preview tonight's vice presidential candidate debate for us.
A lot less interrupting than we saw last week. I suspect it will not be as explosive as the presidential candidates. But we're going to see Kamala Harris and Mike Pence talking about the economy, talking about coronavirus, talking about their visions for America and why they, the number two to two, you know, a 70-something-year-old president and presidential candidate would do if they were forced to take that office at some point as well.
We'll recap that tomorrow on the show. Ginger, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Ginger Gibson is Deputy Washington Editor for NBC Digital. She joined us today for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics.